Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Giannis is the MVP once again, but it is his heart really in Milwaukee? You have to wonder after what he said yesterday. Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. We'll hear exactly what Giannis said after winning his second MVP yesterday in just a moment here. But before we get to that, John Dickinson, you know, last night, Lakers and Nuggets game one of the Western Conference Finals. I'm thinking, hey, I know the NBA doesn't want to have the Heat against the Nuggets in the finals, but yeah, whatever. And then last night, there's a bit of a foul disparity between the Lakers and the Nuggets. And I don't know, guess, you know, being a longtime NBA observer, maybe I'm a little jaded, but you can't help but wonder how much the NBA wants LeBron and the Lakers in the finals. That may not be fair to say, but I couldn't help but wonder after what we saw last night. Jokic, by the way, has already picked up two fouls for the next game, which isn't until tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you also have to look at it under the context of, hey, the Lakers are the better team. I mean, they are the better team going into it. And what the Nuggets did against the Clippers was remarkable. To even be in the position to beat the Clippers after what they did against the Jazz makes it, you know, even more special. But I do think you have to view that entire series under the lens of, hey, the Lakers are the better team. And by the way, Denver should have beaten Utah. They were the favorite in that series. Mm-hmm. So they kind of saved themselves in that series and then were able to pull off the upset in the second series. So, and here's the other thing, you know, along those lines. You know, the Nuggets are a damn good team. Like, I'm not trying to, like, they were the third best team in the West, and you know, they knocked out the two, and now they're playing the one. So, I do think they deserve respect. I didn't feel like it was shady, though. I'll give you that from watching the game.
Mm-hmm. I thought the second quarter was a little iffy, but I agree with you. I don't know that it would matter anyway. Jokic having some problem with the Lakers' length, and obviously they have a lot of length they can throw at you. And I know I made this point earlier, but after that game last night, I was reminded of the first preseason game this year, October the 5th, that is the Warriors' first preseason game, well, last year, but you understand what I'm saying.
This
almost
season.
A year ago. Yeah, yeah, crazy. And that first game, the first of, what, 17 or 18 preseason games between the Lakers and the Warriors last year, and the Lakers destroyed the Warriors. And I remember you and I on the air, and we were talking about the fact that, okay, look, I know this is just one game, but the Warriors got issues, and the Lakers look really good. And people, as they should have, they were texting us and calling and saying, you guys, you're overreacting. It's just one game. But a lot of what we took from that first preseason game was right on both counts, JD.
Yeah, and Steph Curry playing a full season would have offset a lot of it. But I still maintain that the Warriors would have found themselves in a position where they were probably fighting for the eighth seed, to be honest, with the talent that they had, even with Steph. A year ago. I'm not sure that they would have been. I mean, they definitely would have been a team, you know, in the group. And honestly, I think ultimately they probably would have gotten the eighth seed. Like, even if they were, let's say Steph misses a month and then he comes back and then, you know, they don't have a lot of talent, but they make the trade for Wiggins and it's like, boy, this is just a weird year. And like, I think the Warriors would have been in the, you know, unique position of, I mean, think about it. They could have had, they could have been the team that won the 8th seed in the bubble with Steph and then Clay back. And
I know.
Then had a shot to make a run. I mean, it's in some ways, it's kind of a shame that we didn't get a chance to see that narrative play out. But I do think they would have had Steph played. It's more likely that they would have been in that conversation for the 8th seed than a team that would have been middle of the pack in the West.
Yeah, I was one of the people hoping to see that, especially when the season got delayed. And I know by that time the Warriors were already eliminated, but I was hoping they'd finagle some way to get them back into the bubble. Would have loved to have seen that. That said, can't wait to see what we do see from the Warriors and who's on the team when they resume play. Giannis is the MVP for the second year in a row. Now, we know that right after the Bucks were eliminated by Miami, he was asked about asking for a trade. He said, that's not going to happen, right? That's what he said initially. And we know that he met with ownership. We know that he deleted his teammates from his Instagram account. So this was interesting. Giannis yesterday at the press conference at which he was officially named the MVP, this is what he said about his future as it relates to the Milwaukee Bucks.
I have two great agent that helped me with that, and I know they're gonna put me in the best position to be successful with the team or without the team. But at the end of the day, I had a great conversation with the owner, and as I know, so far we're on the same page. And I want to be working for the rest of my career. But at the end of the day, we gotta want the same thing, which is championship.
I have two great agents that helped me with that, and I know they're gonna put me in the best situation to be successful with the team or another team. But at the end of the day, I had a great conversation with the owner, and as I know so far, we're on the same page. I want to be in Milwaukee for the rest of my career. But at the end of the day, we've got to want the same thing, which is a championship. As long as everybody's on the same page and as long as everybody is fighting for the same thing every single day, which is to be a champion, I don't see why not be in Milwaukee for the next 15 years. So he's not saying I want out, but at the same time, he's letting them know, if I don't like the way things are going here, my agents are going to be looking out for me, JD.
Well, how do you read it? Because the next he can say whatever he said, and that's fine. But what's going to tell the story is whether or not he agrees to the Supermax extension or decides to play out the final year of his contract. So do you read that as he's going to play out the final year of his contract and then decide?
The way I read it is he's letting them know, we had a meeting, we talked about some things, I let you know how I feel, I'm very serious about those things, just so you know, don't misunderstand me. If this doesn't continue to go in the direction that I want it to go, if we don't address some of the specifics we talked about in the meeting, which of course we're not privy to, I'm not hitching my wagon here. To me, it's almost like a threat. Like, hey, I know we had the meeting, everything's great, and I want to stay here, but look, those things I said, we're going to have to do those things, or I'm not hitching my wagon to Milwaukee.
Well, and but again, at some point here before the season, he would have to sign, before next season, he would have to sign that Supermax extension. And if he doesn't do that, then it's an indicate, if he does do that, yeah, all is good. I guess what I'm wondering is, is that still on the table for Milwaukee? And what I mean is, if Milwaukee makes a couple of trades, once they're able to make trades and changes the roster and brings in maybe a player that he
Chris
wants
Paul
to play with as a number two, will he then sign the Supermax and lock himself to Milwaukee for another 4 or 5 years, beyond the final year of his contract? Because if he doesn't do that, then it's open season as far as, him leaving. And I think at that point it becomes more likely that he winds up leaving than that he doesn't wind up leaving. So, but then the other aspect of it, though, Whitey, is that, like, okay, well, how does it pertain to the Warriors? He could decide to leave, but the Warriors cannot get him without a trade. So, it's not like the Warriors can clear cap space and just go sign him as a free agent in 2021. So at the point in which a trade is not the means you know, at the point where he chooses, hey, I'm going to be a free agent, and the trade options are off the table, that's the point where the Warriors are out of the equation, because they can't just sign him outright like other teams would be lining up to do. So in some ways you could say, all right, he might not be in Milwaukee, but the path for the Warriors to actually get him would in some ways go by the wayside.
Unless that's really where he wants to go. And I understand what you're saying, but there are ways to make things happen if that's really where he wants to go. We understand there are other teams that would love to have him. Of course there are. We just don't know how much interest he – we don't know how much interest he has in going to Golden State or Miami or Toronto, wherever. To me, I think what Giannis is saying, this is what I take it to be, is, yeah, this is great here, but as I said, we're going to have to address these issues. Now, yeah, they can offer him the Supermax this summer, but he can take his time in deciding whether or not to sign it, right? It's not like he has a week to decide. So to me, I wouldn't be surprised if he's at all skeptical about the direction they're taking. He may play this thing out to keep his options open.
Yeah, and look, the play for Milwaukee is here's your Supermax, sign it or not, and the deadline will ultimately decide, you know, where he goes. But maybe that's tied to, like you said, Chris Paul or somebody else factoring into the equation. He can say he wants to go to the Warriors, but unless he demands the trade now, which he's also, you know, said he wasn't going to ask for a trade. I mean, that was going back a couple of days. So unless he says, I want to be traded to the Warriors, I mean, the Bucks don't have to re-sign him in the offseason and then sign and trade him to the Warriors as a free agent, you know, next year. The Bucks could say, forget that. Because they would be losing the player at that point in time, and that would be the only means that he could even get to be a Warrior. So the opposition holds, you know, some of the cards here too. So I think it's more of a long shot,
sure,
now than it was a couple of days ago, and I've seen it kind of framed another way. Like, look, Giannis may not be in Milwaukee after next year.
Actually, it's pronounced Milwaukee.
Absolutely on the table that he's not there, okay? But is he more or less likely to be with the Warriors a year from now? I think it's actually probably less likely.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to happen when, as I mentioned, after they were eliminated, when he said, look, I'm not going to demand a trade. And so now, to me, when this is the first time, as far as I know, and look, I know that we're probably making too much of this, but this is the first time that I know of that Giannis publicly has spoken about another team. And he said he wants to stay in Milwaukee, but he also said, my agents, I know they're going to put me in the best situation to be successful with the team or another team. So I think that's worth noting. I thought this was interesting, too. Yesterday on the pregame show, we had Draymond was on there. And, of course, they asked him about Giannis and the MVP. And Ernie Johnson says, hey, don't tamper. Well, what Draymond said about Giannis was really interesting. He said, look, he's the MVP, but he's not the best player. Because Kenny Smith had said, oh, Giannis is the best player in the league. And Draymond said, he's the MVP, but he's not the best player. LeBron is the best player. And so they disagreed on that. How do you think that breaks down?
Yeah, I mean, Giannis to me was the MVP. I mean, if you want to make
two
a
years
case
in a row,
yeah, if you want to make a case that LeBron's the best, I mean, I don't care, frankly. Like, I think it's a stupid argument, there's a part of me that I feel like that whole debate is beneath me, to be perfectly honest. Like, Giannis had a great year. LeBron is an all-time great. What he did at his age is fantastic. If you want to make a case that LeBron's still a better player than Giannis overall, I think that's fair. I think it can be debated. I think you could say, well, wait a minute, it's not 28 or 29 or even 30-year-old LeBron, but it's still really, really good or great LeBron. If you want to debate it, fine. It's just not something I care to even get into. Like, I don't care. Like, Giannis won the MVP, rightfully so. Is LeBron a little better? Is this and that? Like, I think it's actually a really boring, kind of a tune-out conversation.
Well, I think it would be if it was you and I and we're discussing it. I think the fact that Draymond went there, to me, that makes it, to me, more interesting. It's like, wow, that's the way a guy who's played against him sees it. Of course, I guess, you know, Draymond and LeBron, they actually, they've gotten kind of friendly. So I just thought it was interesting from that perspective. Like, wow.
Yeah,
and Kenny Smith, of course, disagrees. Yeah, a guy's a two-time MVP. Hello? And then you get into the whole thing, and I know LeBron was upset about the voting. He said, peed me off. You know, I only got, what did he get, a handful of first-place votes.
16.
Yeah, okay. He didn't appreciate that. He said he got 16 first place votes. That upset me more than anything. You know, not saying that the winner wasn't deserving of the MVP, but that upset me, and I finished second a lot in my career, either from a championship and now four times as an MVP, end quote. To me, the debate that it just makes my head spin is when people talk in any sport about the MVP and they say, well, it doesn't say best player, it says the most valuable. And to me, it's like, hello, that's just a fancier name for it. How can anyone in any sport be more valuable than the best player? You know, and this notion that, well, who's more valuable to their team? Well, you know, there's no award for that. Who cares who's more valuable to their team? If a really good guy's on a really horrible team, he's probably more valuable to that team. So anyway, that to me is a debate that makes me a little nauseous. But as far as who's the best player? I don't know, but Draymond saying it's LeBron. Because for years, people around the league would say that. Say, yeah, LeBron doesn't win the MVP every year, but he's still the best player. I don't know that he still is, but it's interesting to me that Draymond had that to say. LeBron said, I never came into this league to be MVP or to be a champion. I've always just wanted to get better and better every single day, and those things will take care of itself. But some things is just out of my hand, and some things you can't control. But it peed me off. He was not happy to get only 16 first-place votes. Giannis, the two-time MVP. Of course he's a two-time MVP. There's a reason why they don't give the award after the postseason. It's a regular season award. There's no question Giannis should be the winner this year.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I got nothing to add. It's just, yeah, Giannis, MVP. He would have got my vote. I mean, to me, again, if you want to have a debate about it, it's kind of like a couple years ago when Steph won 2 years in a row, you know, was, and LeBron was younger. You know, was Steph the best player in the game at that point in time? Or was LeBron the best player? Because I think that debate did come up then. And, you know, LeBron, I think at that point, was still the best player in the game, but Steph was the MVP. So I think because LeBron's older, I'm a little bit more open to having that conversation because Giannis is doing it, and Giannis is so much younger. But it's just a convoluted – I mean, it's a convoluted semantical debate. I just don't – I'm – let's talk some Niners. I mean, let's talk some Warriors. Let's talk some Niners. I mean, I'm kind of over it.
All right. Well, LeBron's 35, so to me, I don't know that he is the best player anymore, but it's interesting to see the way he can take over a ball game as he did last night. It's Whitey and JD on 95.7, the game on the text line. Draymond is trying to discourage the possibility of Giannis' rumor coming to fruition. He doesn't want to become the fourth best player in the Warriors again. Yeah, I'm sure Draymond would welcome Giannis coming here, but that's an interesting way to look at it. All right, the 49ers and the Jets tomorrow. John Dickinson, it looks like there's something of a consensus. This will be a lower scoring, ugly game most likely, and I know that's the way you see it.
I do. I mean, how do you see it? I mean, I know you said maybe 27-17. I mean, I feel like it's going to be an ugly win for the Niners, and it's going to be the win that we spend the next week talking about how, because it wasn't pretty enough, the 49ers are still not good enough and not where they need to be, and there's still, you know, questions about Garoppolo, and this team isn't the same as they were a year ago, and they got to get healthier, and they need so I feel like it's a price of admission win. It's a win that they absolutely have to get. But I just feel like it's going to be the win that's going to continue the conversation. It's almost not even going to feel like a win because we've, you know, painted the Jets to be, you know, the worst team of all time, I think, even though they're probably not. And we've painted the 49ers as a team that should be blowing out even, you know, good teams from time to time because they went to the Super Bowl and were so close to winning it. So I think it's just... I want to see a more even performance, but I just feel like we probably won't get that from the 49ers, and that's okay. But, I mean, do you think style points matter, I guess, is probably the best way for me to kind of kick it back to you.
Absolutely not. They don't matter at all. I'm wondering what surprised you the most about week one, the loss to Arizona. We talked on the morning show to Cam Inman, and I asked him what surprised Kyle Shanahan the most about that game. And he said one of the things that surprised all the 49ers, Salah, all of them, was the mix-up on the coverage that led to the go-ahead Arizona touchdown where they had a breakdown in coverage. He said that really surprised everybody, surprised Shanahan and Richard Sherman, and said we had a miscommunication where I guess you had half the field in zone, half the field of man-to-man. So at a crucial juncture of the game, I don't know if we're more likely to see more things like that without Richard Sherman in there, but is there a particular aspect of that loss that you would say surprised you the most? To me, it was just how out of rhythm the passing game was. I know that happens, and I understand Kittle's out and they're shorthanded at receiver, but the rhythm, especially in the second half of the passing game, so out of whack. That really surprised me.
Yeah, it was the fact that it was how they lost, because I know it's kind of been the revisionist history coming out of the game was boy, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins shredded them. And and I don't feel like they got shredded. I just feel like they couldn't get Kyler Murray on the ground when they had some opportunities, and that's a credit to him. He's able to escape and make plays. But I feel like it's a game that the 49ers should have been in control of and maybe even blown the Cardinals out by halftime or early in the third quarter. And because they couldn't pick up a first down on third down, because they couldn't punch it in at the goal line, because of the block punt, the entire game got flipped, and then it became a game where, at that point, Jimmy Garoppolo needed to convert some throws, and he was unable to do it, and the defense got tired, and then they wound up in kind of a backyard football game with, you know, two really good backyard football players in Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, and those two became, for that period of time, the best two players on the field that day. Now, Hopkins was the best player on the field all day. I don't think there's much doubt about that, but those two in the fourth quarter, the best two players were Kyler and Hopkins, and the game at that point was in a position where the Cardinals could kind of steal it. I'm surprised, and that's the biggest surprise for me, that the 49ers allowed the Cardinals to almost steal the game from being down 10-0 early. That's the part that it just, like, because that's a game the Niners would have won last year, whether they would have won it going away or whether they would have won it at the end with Jimmy Garoppolo hitting Kendrick Bourne. Either way you add it up, there are two different ways I think the Niners would have won that game last year. They didn't, and I think that is the most concerning aspect of it. It's not an individual necessarily here or there. It's just the fact that the Cardinals weren't that great and still were able to kind of steal it. That lends itself to, hey, the 49ers are going to have more problems this year closing out games against a lot of teams that maybe they didn't a year ago.
Yeah, because while Arizona is very talented and they did a lot of things well, there's no way they win that game last week if the 49ers don't leave the door open for them on a handful of occasions, right? On a handful of occasions, the 49ers win that game unless they keep giving Arizona opportunities, and they actually did that.
Yeah, it just, and so I think it, even to a game like tomorrow, it lends itself to, at least until proven otherwise, thinking that it's going to be a closer game than maybe a lot of 49ers fans would want. I just keep going back to the ugly games last year that the 49ers won. They won ugly against Tampa. They won ugly against Pittsburgh. They won ugly against Washington. You know, as the season went on, they were just, you know, they I don't know that they won ugly against Arizona either time. Maybe the second game you could make a case they did, although they played pretty well offensively when they needed to in the moment of that game in November. But there were three or four games that the 49ers could have lost that they won ugly. And the game last week, I put in the category of what if they had lost to Washington? What if they had lost to Tampa? What if they had lost one of the Arizona games a year ago? How would we have looked at that season differently, or how much would that have changed last season? And for the 49ers, it's pretty simple. If they had lost any one of those games, they would have been a wild card team and not a division winner. And then their whole path to a Super Bowl would have been completely different, and they probably wouldn't have made it. So that immediately puts that kind of long-term outcome, I think, at the forefront and on the table, which is something that maybe 49er fans weren't wanting to have to acknowledge in week two.
So how much of the Arizona loss was really you-know-whose fault? That's next. Whitey and JD, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey and JD, Saturday morning, 95.7 The Game. Get ready for another NFL Sunday, 49er football. The only early East Coast game of the year for the 49ers tomorrow against the Jets. 888-957-9570. We're still trying to do the autopsy of last week while we're also looking forward to the game tomorrow. Just wondering, what surprised you the most? What single aspect of that loss surprised you the most last week? 888-957-9570. I was surprised by how out of rhythm the passing game was. But what's at stake for the 49ers tomorrow? Hopefully it'll be a get-right Sunday for them. You don't want to fall to 0-2. Now, I know that this year you have additional playoff teams, so the calculations are off a little bit. But to this point, since 2007, 12 of 107 0-2 teams have made the playoffs. That's 11%. Again, as JD pointed out, and it's certainly you have to point out, the math is different this year because there's an additional team in each conference. But since 2007, 12 of 107 0-2 teams have made the playoffs, 11%. The last to do it, 2018, both the Texans and the Seahawks started 0-2 and advanced to the postseason. I didn't think the 49ers were going to lose last week, JD. I know we talked about it Sunday. It's that said, and I know that no George Kittle, and they miss him terribly. That's one of the reasons the passing game was out of whack last week. And Richard Sherman, they're 0-3, the 49ers 0-3 without Richard Sherman. But I still have a hard time imagining the Jets winning that game tomorrow.
Yeah, I do too. And I think there's really three different ways that the 49ers can win the game. They can win the game by their defensive line being dominant and wreaking havoc and making Sam Darnold so uncomfortable that the Jets just can't move the ball and he doesn't have enough time consistently to pick on the cornerbacks, which are depleted, obviously, with no Richard Sherman. So I feel like that's the first area where the 49ers can win. The second area, and I know you mentioned astutely, you pointed out the fact that the Jets did a nice job against the run in week one against Buffalo. I think the 49ers need to be able to run the football and should be able to run the football against the Jets. That's what the 49ers pride themselves on. It's the how their offense it goes. It's all based on having a strong running attack. I think that's a way that the 49ers can take control of the game. I also think the passing game is an area where they can. If it comes down to it, and the Bills had a lot of success throwing, Greg Williams is going to bring blitzes. The game might be in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands, and he might have to, with a patchwork receiving crew and a rookie, make it his NFL debut in Brandon Ayuk. He may have to sling it a little bit all over the field. I feel better about the receiving core this week than I did last week. But if it comes down to beating him throwing the ball, Jimmy Garoppolo's got to go beat him throwing the ball, and I think he should be able to do it. So any way you look at it from those three different areas where, hey, if the 49ers can dominate in two of these three or one of these three, they can win the game. I think they've got three different ways that they can do it, even being shorthanded against this Jets team.
Last week, Josh Allen and the Bills beat the Jets 27-17. Josh Allen threw for 300 yards. That's the first time in his career that he's thrown for 300 yards in a game. The Jets allowed that. So there should be opportunities there for Jimmy Garoppolo. On the text line, 888-957-9570 from the 408, you shouldn't be surprised about how out of rhythm the passing game was. Jimmy G has been overrated since he came here. Shanahan makes everybody look better, turned Ryan into an MVP, turns average quarterbacks like Jimmy into decent quarterbacks. Thank you for checking in. That brings us to the question of the inevitable question. When the 49ers lose, how much of it has to do with Jimmy Garoppolo? Last week, his numbers were good. If you just looked at his numbers, passer rating, they were good, and he didn't throw any interceptions. But if you look at the film and you look at how many times he missed opportunities, either didn't see a receiver or, of course, with Bourne in the end zone, underthrows him, that told a different story. Here's what Mike Florio said. But let me preface this by saying it's pretty clear Mike Florio either just doesn't like Jimmy Garoppolo or he feels that that can be his thing, as being the anti-Garoppolo fan. Because I know last year before the Packers and the 49ers played in the NFC Championship game, Mike Florio, and I believe it was on a podcast, he said he liked the Packers because Jimmy Garoppolo was more likely to self-urinate himself. So if you're talking a language, you know, it's pretty clear that, and maybe that's just his professional opinion, that's fine. But here's what Florio said after the game last week. He said, I think that unless Jimmy G dramatically changes what we saw from him on Sunday, this is going to be his last year with the 49ers. I'll tell you what I think of that, JD, but I'd love to know what you think of that quote from NBC Sports' Mike Florio.
Well, I like it or not, if he plays like he did week one all year, I think there is a possibility that we're talking about a new quarterback for the 49ers next year. Now, I don't think that he will. I think he will play better. I think he will wind up having a better season, or at least a comparable season, than he did a year ago. I'll say comparable season. I'm not gonna go as far as to say a better statistical season. And they probably won't win as many games as they did last year. They were 13-3, and they've already lost a game in week one that they won a year ago, their home game against Arizona. So that being said, if he has a comparable year to last year, I think he will be the quarterback moving forward. But if it's like it was Sunday, well, then no, he won't be, because they won't win enough and his numbers won't be good enough.
How about this from the 415? Jimmy's a slow starter. If you take a look at every first game he has played in the season so far, his stats are beyond pedestrian, even including last year's win at Tampa Bay, 166 yards, 1-1. He needs a few games in order to get greased up. Thank you from the 415, 888-957-9570. How much of this was Jimmy G's fault? Here's what I think of what Florio said. Of course, we all know that. You're really not saying anything we don't know, but there's an implication there that I don't think is fair when he says, I think that unless Jimmy G dramatically changes what we saw from last Sunday, this is going to be his last year. Yeah, you think? Because he didn't play very well. The 49ers, to their credit, have his deal set up where if Jimmy G does go sideways, they could walk away from it without too much harm being done to the contract structures. But everyone knows that. I mean, Jimmy G knows that, and he's proven he can play better than that. So that's what I resent about what Florio wrote. I think, to me, it implies that, wow, the 49ers really are not sure about this guy. And I think the 49ers like what Jimmy G has brought. I think they're very happy with him, but at the same time, they recognize, wow, he didn't have a good game last week. I mean, sometimes it's just that simple, JD.
I also think they recognize the fact that you could do a lot worse. Like, regardless of what your opinion of Jimmy Garoppolo is, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is still, like, the 49ers are not going to replace Jimmy Garoppolo with, like, you can't replace him unless you're getting somebody that's better. And I think the 49ers would have a hard time replacing him for a quarterback that would be deemed a lateral move. Like if you're talking about, hey, you can get Drew Brees for a year, you can get Aaron Rodgers, or you can get, you know, even like last year, Tom Brady, you know, even as old as Tom Brady is now, you know, okay, you look at it. If you could get the 2013 version of Peyton Manning, you know, somewhere, okay, then maybe you look at it. But I just don't see the 49ers moving on from Jimmy Garoppolo and signing another quarterback that's, you know, middle of the pack like a Jimmy Garoppolo, if that makes sense.
Of course it does. It makes perfect sense. From the 669, to your point, JD, Bears fan here, we'll take Jimmy, LOL.
Exactly.
Although Trubisky's middle name. Well, I think it's actually David or something. But I was going to say Trubisky's middle name has come back after last week. From the 408, how has Mullins looked in camp practice? I know his first game was against the Raiders, but is there something there, potential? Yeah, if you need to go there. But Jimmy Garoppolo has proven that he can take your team to the Super Bowl. I think I may have been on with you when I made this point, JD, and I apologize if I'm being redundant. But you know how a lot of us, we look at Super Bowls and quarterbacks and say, well, if a guy hasn't won a Super Bowl, gee, I don't know. But I remember there was a time, of course, the U.S. Open is on now, oddly enough, in this weird year. But Phil Mickelson used to be a guy about whom people said, yeah, he's great, but I don't know if he can win a major. Well, I think now he's won five. So you just, it's like it's not an issue anymore. So until Jimmy G wins a Super Bowl, I think there's still going to be people that go, gee, he's good, but I don't know. And also, well, Shanahan's reputation works against his quarterbacks, right? Someone mentioned it. Oh, Matt Ryan, you know, Shanahan made Matt Ryan what he is. There's something about Shanahan's system and the way people view it that causes them to downgrade quarterbacks who play in it.
Yeah, well, Matt Ryan was a hell of a quarterback before he got with Kyle Shanahan. I mean, he did obviously win the MVP with Kyle Shanahan, but Matt Ryan was a good quarterback that had won game. You know, he had winning seasons. Led his team to the number one seed in 2011. Like, people forget that. Matt Ryan led the Falcons to the one seed in 2011. Now, they did get beat by Green Bay, or 2010, the 2011 postseason in January. The Packers went on to win the Super Bowl that year. But Matt Ryan, Matt Ryan's won a lot in his career. So, I don't love that comparison to Matt Ryan. I just think when you look at Garoppolo, he's won. And as far as Nick Mullins goes, yeah, the conversation about Nick Mullins playing over Jimmy Garoppolo, the only way that's going to happen is if Garoppolo has multiple games where it's like one touchdown, two interceptions, two touchdowns, four interceptions. Like the catastrophic game or two games would have to happen and they'd have to lose before we're having a conversation about replacing him as a quarterback for Nick Mullins. I mean, we are a long ways away from – and by long ways, I don't mean in terms of games. Like, if Garoppolo goes out and throws three interceptions tomorrow and then throws two more against the Giants and maybe they win one of those games and they're 1-2 and then they come back home and they lose to Philly and they're 1-3 and he throws a couple pick sixes. Okay, then we're having the conversation, within the next 3 or 4 weeks about, should he be replaced? So it's not out of the realm of possibility that we're talking about it relatively soon, but it would be an extreme surprise if he plays that badly enough, and he would have to play that badly for us to be even having that conversation by that point in time. So I think you got to get that out of your head. Like, if the Niners are, 3-3 and Garoppolo has played like he had, did week one over the course of six games, where, maybe he's missed some throws, but they've won some games, but they've lost. Like, we're not having the conversation if they're 3-3 and he's got 12 touchdowns and four interceptions. Like, we're not. Even if he's missed a lot of the throws that he missed in the first game, and that is part of the reason why they're 3-3. Like, that type of performance is not going to lend itself to you got to go with a backup quarterback. Teams go to the backup quarterback when their starting quarterback stinks for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time. We're nowhere near that.
Right. And it is understandable that, while Jimmy G missed some throws and he made some bad throws, the receiving core last week was battered and he really missed Kittle in the second half. And I know the 49ers kind of downplayed the injury, but that had a ton to do with the fact that Kittle didn't have any catches. Now, if you looked at the film, there are a time or two where Kittle was open. And so there's always going to be that with Jimmy G because he does throw interceptions. He takes chances. And there's also this, looking at why I think people are always going to have issues with Jimmy Garoppolo here in San Francisco. The game is trending one way towards more mobile quarterbacks, and he ain't ever going to be that, right? And Kyle Shanahan knows that, and Kyle Shanahan's offense goes another way. But you've got guys that can make plays with their legs. Last week around the league, I mentioned Josh Allen. Josh Allen's very mobile, and of course Kyler Murray – and Lamar Jackson, Mahomes can get out of the pocket. He's never going to be that. Jimmy G's never going to be that. But I think it's interesting to look at this offense that Kyle Shanahan runs with great success, zone stretch, and a mobile quarterback's not part of that. And that was considered just a couple years ago. This is the offense of the future. Actually, it's based on some very old principles. But the game is trending one way, and Kyle Shanahan's offense goes another. And so I think that we're going to have issues with that going forward. Anytime there's issues with the Jimmy Garoppolo, people are going to look at, well, how come they can't have a quarterback like any of these other guys that are so mobile? But it's just two different approaches, JD.
Yeah, I think the counter to that is this. It's, well, Jimmy Garoppolo isn't one of the top three or four or five pocket passers. So it's like, it's almost, is he good enough to win that way versus, okay, you know, not being one of the mobile guys. So it's like, it's fine if you're one of the pocket passers, but if you're one of the pocket passers, you got to be a real big boy. You know, if you're going to play that way, maybe in today's game, and does he reach that point of you know, being able to be successful enough playing the style he does, or would it be better off if you had a quarterback that's more, you know, like the new wave, let's say, of the NFL? I think that's the other part of that debate. The other angle to it is, well, he's not mobile, but he's also not good enough as a pocket guy to win the ultimate prize.
Right. So you're saying he's not accurate enough. That's fine if you can't get out of the pocket, but then you better be extremely accurate. And there are times when he's frankly not.
Yeah, that's the thing. He misses some easy throws. Like, that's like, I don't feel like his interceptions, for the most part. I mean, and this is the other unique part of Garoppolo's game. I want to get your take on this. I don't feel like Garoppolo being inaccurate leads to interceptions a lot of the time. I think it leads to incompletions and being out of rhythm and just, you know, a lot of the things we saw in the game on Sunday. I think bad reads and what is he doing and why would he throw it there? I think those are where he typically has his interceptions. Now, inaccuracy can lead to interceptions. Obviously, a throw a little bit behind gets tipped in the air. You know, those kinds of things, you know, it gets picked off. You know, lack of accuracy obviously does lead to interceptions. I feel like in his case specifically, though, that has not frequently been the case. His interceptions are more horrific decisions as opposed to just general lack of accuracy. But there are a lot of games where he does miss easy throws, and you wind up looking back and going, damn, if he had hit this throw or that throw, this game would have been a blowout. Or in the case of the game against Arizona, they would have won the game. Now, to Jimmy's credit, throughout his 49ers tenure, and I think this is where we reached maybe a little bit of a fork in the road after week one, he typically would make the throw at the end of the game, and they would win. And we would be evaluating him under the context of, well, he did have three touchdown passes and no interceptions. And was he accurate? No. But he hit the one throw when he needed to. He led him down the field twice when they had to score touchdowns, and they won both games. Jimmy Jesus, he's back. Super Bowl.
It's a great point.
That's the fine line we're on here.
Feels great, baby.
Yes. Yeah, it's a great point you make about the interceptions. His interceptions seem to be more the cause of him taking chances that he shouldn't take, or just not seeing something than a missed throw. Go back to last year. I know I talked about this last week. Last year's game at Levi's against Arizona, which the 49ers won. They got off to a terrible start. They had just played Monday night against Seattle, fell behind, but then they won the game. But Jimmy G had a red zone interception you can't even understand what happened, because he threw it to Jordan Hicks, a linebacker, and he was just standing there. And Jimmy G was looking for somebody in the end zone, and he threw it right to the linebacker. He clearly didn't see him, when it's hard to imagine how he didn't see him. So, yeah, that's a great point. Jimmy G still throws those types of interceptions. And then the misfires. The ones that I can't understand are like on the swing passes, and even the one to Kittle. It's like, that's such a short pass, and the inaccuracy on that pass, it resulted in your best receiver getting injured. I'm not saying Jimmy Garoppolo should be ashamed of himself, but that's a big issue. So that's a great point you raise. It's two separate issues, the inaccuracy and the interceptions, but the inaccuracy doesn't always lead to the interceptions. Those are quite often caused by something else entirely. The more we talk about this, the more I'm starting to think maybe Mike Florio's right. Maybe there are some serious issues with this guy going forward. Here from the 925, JD, he throws too late. He needs to throw his receivers open. Not sure if he can ever do that. That's another fair point.
No, it is. And there are times where you watch and you go, and he looks right, and there is somebody left wide open. And you can see it on the screen, and you can really see it in the stadium when that happens. You're like, oh my God, that guy's open to the left and he's looking right, and you're thinking, mm-hmm. uh-oh, and then by the time he looks left, that play isn't there, and then he's what am I gonna do? And it can lead to, you know, the 360 that he did, and he ended up taking a sack, made himself dizzy on the play. But it is interesting, because he also is still, for all the things we talk about with Jimmy Garoppolo, he has been good enough to win. And even the playoff thing, well, he can't win in the playoffs. Well, he's 2-1 in the 2-1 in the playoffs. You know, if you have an over 500 record in the playoffs, that usually means you've won a Super Bowl. So if you have an over 500 record in the playoffs for your career, I mean, I think sometimes people think, like, most quarterbacks are going to have a losing record in the playoffs unless they win a Super Bowl, because that year, obviously, you would have a 3-0 or a 4-0 kind of a run, and that, you know, propels you to where you'd have to lose 4 years in a row to even sniff having a losing record. So to have a winning record in the playoffs and not win a Super Bowl, you know, that shows you that a guy does have some intangibles that go to the positive side.
What is your best guess here, JD? We don't know this. We know what he said publicly. But what's your best guess? If you sat down with Kyle Shanahan and he knew that, all right, this is all off the record, it's not going to be repeated, not going to be recorded. If you ask Kyle Shanahan right now, what do you think of Jimmy Garoppolo as your quarterback now and going forward, what do you think Coach Shanahan would say?
I can work with it. I think he would say, I can work with it. I think he can be good enough. I think there are one or two things that just absolutely make me want to, you know, pound my head against a wall, but it's there, and damn it, he's close. It's close to unlocking the perfect relationship to where I can win with this guy consistently for years, but it's not quite there yet. But damn it, it's tantalizingly close.
I think it's and you touched on this, I think it's going to come down to Kyle Shanahan being a perfectionist, so he's probably never going to be completely satisfied, right? I mean, if they win a Super Bowl or more than one, it's like, that was great. I think he's always going to look at Jimmy G as, all right, there's some things he still doesn't completely grasp about my offense and when he's supposed to do what. That said, he's proven that we can win with him. He's courageous in the pocket. Yeah, not real mobile, but he'll stand in there, which is really important. And the other thing is, there's just no better options right now. He's a really good quarterback who can get better, and he's also our best option. So why in the world would I want to move off of that?
Yeah, there's one more part of this, too, that I want to get into in terms of the mentality of Garoppolo. I want to get your take on it, and maybe we can get, you know, maybe some of the listeners out there would want to weigh in on it, because I think there's a mentality that Jimmy Garoppolo, I think, has to play with that he doesn't always play with. And maybe Kyle Shanahan doesn't always want him playing with it. And I think that could be part of why at times he does struggle in a certain way. So we can get into that coming up here in the back half.
Yes, we will get into that. Yes, the mentality that Jimmy G needs to bring every Sunday, certainly tomorrow, that's coming up. Also, speaking of quarterbacks, can this great quarterback truly be underrated? One great coach says he is. That's all coming up. Whitey and JD, 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.